Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, chair of the club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers. Suzette Sherman is the founder and CEO of SevenPonds.com, the leading website and blog resource that addresses the end-of-life process and experience. Her ultimate goal is to change the way we think about death. Suzette is a board member of the Bay Area Funeral Consumers Association, an advisor to Let's Have Dinner and Talk About Death, as well as a past board member of the Silicon Valley chapter of the Entrepreneurs Organization. Formerly a designer and always a design thinker, in 1990 and 1991, Suzette was awarded two National Endowment for the Arts grants for researching ecologically designed product standards, along with the Environmental Defense Fund, New York City. She's also had her own feature column, Eco Alert, covering ecological design for International Design Magazine. She now writes Sharing Suzette for Seven Ponds. Peter Strathus is a board member and of Seven Ponds and a designer who's passionate about helping change the way we observe aging and end of life in America. Peter is the principal of Virtual Studio, an award-winning product design consultancy whose works have been exhibited internationally and included in the permanent collections of several major museums. Past projects include the design of the leading brand of ergonomic kitchen gadgets, designed to assist both young and elderly individuals equally. Most recently, he's designed a technically groundbreaking portable inhaler for those suffering from debilitating chronic illnesses. A proponent of universal design, he believes in redesigning the details of the present to inclusively accommodate the future of an aging population. So now let's welcome our speakers, Suzette and then Peter. Suzette?
I want to thank everybody for coming this evening. It's really wonderful to have you here.
Whoa. It's a little heavy duty. We need to get the side lights. This is recording.
Okay. So, yeah, you're good.
Got it. This evening's presentation is called Let's Talk About Death. Transforming the Last Taboo. We want to show you how, as the boomers face their own mortality, we're in the midst of a cultural shift, with the boom generation embracing death as a natural and evolutionary part of life.
It wasn't that long ago that a father would walk into a hospital and see his newborn child for the first time through glass. And now we have natural childbirth at home with family and friends attending. And we video it and we put it on Facebook. It's also not been that long since we saw couples in separate beds on film and in TV. And now we see steamy sex scenes in the middle of daytime soaps. Like birth and sex of the past, the boomers are now transforming the last taboo, death.
At a close look, the rising cremation rate is the greatest indicator reflecting the changing attitudes around end of life and the transformations happening in grief and memorialization. With the cremation rate nearing 50% in the U.S., it's becoming common throughout all demographics as an option to traditional burial. And with Marin County having almost 100% cremation rate, we sit here tonight at the epicenter of this change.
So today we're going to show you the four trends that are driving this transformation. We will show you some examples for each of these trends, but there's many more. And then in the last part of the presentation, we're going to look forward to what we see coming down in changes in the future.
The first trend we see is the creation of a personalized approach to end of life. The boomers seek to own their death experience. They're personalizing their approach to end of life and seek to create meaning in these experiences. Coinciding with the rise of cremation, there's also something I call soft spiritualism, or kind of like an a la carte approach to a religion. And because of that, people are choosing to have memorials at personally meaningful locations and away from traditional funeral homes. Often they're creating do-it-yourself memorials and are establishing their own rituals that reflect their own contemporary meanings around love, memory, family, and friends. As a part of this, home funerals are becoming a growing trend. Not unlike in the 1800s, where we once laid out the dead for services on the kitchen table or parlor sofa, this practice has returned with families sharing their loss by keeping the body at home for a time, allowing the opportunity a family needs to let go collectively and in their own way. As in a lot of things today, design is also playing a role in reshaping how we experience death. Crematoriums and funeral homes are addressing this with a contemporary approach to building architectural spaces that redefine the ceremonial experience itself. In many European examples, you see minimal architectural spaces that, while being non-denominational in feel, still convey all of the spirituality of age-old cathedrals. Japan has many awe-inspiring crematoriums. The most compelling is called the Water Temple, and it's as much a building as it is a sensory experience. Built largely underground, the roof of the building is actually an artificial lily pond. To enter the structure, you descend a long stair cutting into the ground, giving you the meditative feeling of submerging yourself into a calming pool. The interior spaces are all done in vibrant reds and detailed as in classic Buddhist temples. We're also seeing people bringing their particular and unique cultural backgrounds into their memorial practices. Common in other places of the world, open-air cremations are a sublime and moving ritual that has begun to be embraced more and more throughout the U.S. as well. This example in Colorado is a pyre shared by a group of spiritual organizations for the ritual burning of the members of their families and extended tribes. Memorial jewelry was once a popular accessory of the past that's also making a resurgence, as we once again want to carry a part of our loved ones with us always. Contemporary memorial jewelry pieces address a wide variety of ages and lifestyles and exemplify the various ways those individuals view death. Examples range from the contemplative to the casual, from Psyche's fusing of cremation ashes with glass to form beautiful crystals, and well-known New York-based jeweler Ted Muehling's elegant nature-inspired porcelain pendant urns. For those who are a little more practical than poetic, there's even a key holder and ash container, able to be personalized with meaningful remembrance charms.
So the second trend that we see is that the boomers want to talk about end of life. And this is taking place on both a national and a personal level. So there's a number of social events that are starting to take place to sort of get this conversation going. And for those of you who don't know about death cafes, They originated in Europe. They are now global, and there's many of them locally. And a death cafe is for simply to get together, and it can be with friends, family, or you can invite the public. You can do it at home or in a cafe. And you just get together and you talk about death, any topic. And anyone can host or attend a death cafe, and you simply go to deathcafe.com. We also have Let's Have Dinner and Talk About Death, and it's actually an online format. And you go in and do a step-by-step, and it creates a program for you so that when you're at the dinner table, there are some thoughts in terms of getting end-of-life wishes discussed, and what better place to do it than a meal. So this topic has now reached such a point of blasting open on a national level where both the New York Times and the Huffington Post have columns exclusively on death and dying. So we're also seeing a big shift with films. It's a very stark reality that we're now at a place. So it's hard to believe that it was only 1970 that the first film used the word cancer, and that was Love Story. And more recently, we have Still Alice, where we see a woman at the age of 50 realizing she has dementia. And in Amour, which was released a couple of years ago, we watch as a husband witnesses his wife having a stroke. In the documentary, How to Die in Oregon, they explore the first state in this country that has aid in dying, and they look at both sides of the issue. It's a really good film, and I highly recommend it. And A Will for the Woods was released last year, and it explores natural burial, a man who's terminally ill and wants to be buried naturally, and he goes through the process of making it happen. We see the same reality as well with books. And I would say that probably Tuesdays with Maury was the seminal book that really kicked this off, because he approached it, Maury, completely the opposite of the current generation that doesn't want to talk about death and just wants to go to sleep and not wake up. He instead, Maury, a college professor, who was telling wonderful stories to a student, but what was really heart-grabbing was how he was so full of joy and life and living his last days, even though he was terminally ill, and that was a very pivotal point. Joan Didion coined the term the year of magical thinking, and when her husband died of a heart attack, and what that refers to is that first year when somebody close to you dies and you're in shock, but you still go through the motions of your everyday life. And this is why people will keep belongings in place still. With Cheryl Strayed, we hiked along with her in a brutal 1,000-mile hike in a cathartic experience for her over the loss of her mother. And now we have the seminal book that just came out, Being Mortal, which is Atul Gawande's book, a very famous physician who his own father died. And so he looked at it from both sides of the medical system as well as his own personal experience. So we're also seeing this play out as well in personal blogs. So now we're really on a personal level here, where people are openly displaying what their feelings are and sharing them with the public, whether it's a terminal illness or grieving. And here we have Beyond Goodbye, a blog that's been around for about 4 years now. And Jimmy and Jane Edmonds had lost their son, Josh, to an automobile accident in Vietnam. And they've really, it's a very active blog, and it's been beautiful what they've been doing to get through their healing experience. Here, they do some art as well. This is a beautiful collage here of Josh's face with velvet and his cremation ashes. When Nora found out that her husband, Aaron, had a brain tumor, she created a blog, My Husband's Tumor. And, well, it had a lot of really painful moments in the blog, a lot of very T-shirt-stained moments for them. Conversely, there was a lot of laughter and humor that they had as well. In fact, she referred to it as a love story with some cancer in it. And he actually wrote his own a bit. It was actually very, very humorous, and you can see it up here as well. Permort Aaron Joseph, age 35, died peacefully at home November 25th after complications from a radioactive spider bite that led to years of crime fighting and a years-long battle with a nefarious criminal named Cancer. So it was really quite wonderful. So as the boomers want to talk about this topic, they are also creating tools to do this with. And there is these cards called Go Wish cards, modeled after Go Fish. And it's really an opportunity to help straddle generations, the boomers, to get their parents to talk about this subject matter. And it's just simply cards with different end-of-life wishes, and that just sort of helps get that first kick-started moment going. We also have life legacy cards to help spur ideas for a heart will, or what's also called an ethical will. And that is actually when you bestow non-material gifts to family members, which is stories and memories. And you can actually do this when you create one yourself in any format that you want. It could be in a book, it could be video, it could be letters. Just a wonderful idea. So last year I have Healing Arts, and this to me is just so amazing because there's so many ways that people are healing right now with art. And this is just four examples that I really like. Sherry Lynn Wood does... you can commission a quilt made out of the clothing of somebody that you lost, or you can attend a workshop and go through a grieving experience with others. Child's Own Studio, they make soft toys, and they will take a child's drawing of somebody that they lost and make a soft toy, and the child can carry it around to grieve with and heal. Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep is an amazing nonprofit organization. It's national, of volunteers, photographers. And they will shoot images of mothers and fathers with their stillborn children or children or babies that have died just after birth, and they're just hauntingly beautiful. And last, we have Monday Hearts for Madeline. And Paige Hodell fell in love with Madeline. And every morning, she would make her a heart out of flowers or found objects and put it on her front stoop when she went to work. And Madeline died of ovarian cancer, and she's kept this ritual going all these years. And so she does this every weekend, and every Monday there's a new heart, and it's so beautiful. And you can actually get an email of the heart each week. It can be on our chain.
The third trend we see is an emerging focus on ecological awareness. As an extension of today's growing ecological movement, people who seek to live green now want to die green. Our understanding of the planet's ecosystem and our relationship to it leads people to take a more holistic approach to the dying process. Cremation urns are being designed with biodegradability in mind. Memento is a recycled paper urn designed to benignly decompose and become one with the sea. Another company called Bios provides a biodegradable container with soil and seed included. With the cremation ashes added as fertilizer, it's intended to be planted in the ground out of which a memorial tree will grow, which is actually quite nice. Natural or green burial is a traditional practice that's returning as we wish to be left one with the earth. In natural burial, a body is wrapped in a cloth shroud or placed within a simple, sustainable wooden or cardboard box. There's no embalming done or any artificial lining for the grave. In its purest form, a natural burial landscape is one with no gravestones or visible markers. Instead, a GPS chip is commonly buried with the body. Sustainability through reuse is an important belief system for many today as well. Here, we have a coffin of sustainably grown wood that, until needed, is a part of one's everyday life as a place for books, photos, and personal mementos. Imagine that at your death, your family members collectively assembling your coffin from an object that was once a treasured part of your life. I mean, it sounds far-fetched, but I personally had a friend who, you know, when his father passed away, he and his children, you know, he was a woodworker, you know, they spent the next couple of days, you know, building his cremation box, and it's an incredible experience.
So the fourth trend that we see is for the boomers to be empowered with all of their choices, and some of these are coming to the forefront already, and others we see will be coming down the road. And the internet plays very much into this because it allows people to be not only empowered, but just make the choices that they want because they're able to web search. And it also crosses all geographic and cultural barriers. So here's an example of an issue that's really come in the forefront here, and that's having control over end of life. And in fact, it's even touched the lives of journalists with their own experiences with their parents. Joe Klein of Time magazine was driving two states away when his mother was failing, and he got a call from the physician, and the physician wanted to put his mother on life support. And Joe Klein knew that his mother didn't want this, but he's in the car driving, and so he said yes, he agreed, only to find out he had a week to make that decision. In the case here on the right of Lisa Kruger of our local Mercury News, San Jose, her father was dying in the hospital, and he had all of his advanced care directives in order, and in the last 10 days of his life, the hospital bill was over $300,000, and so she was so irate, she wrote this article and got this tremendous response, and there's been many more articles after this. So this is just an example of some of these issues that are coming forward as the boomers become more empowered. Hospice care is something that we'll see really transform in the future. The current generation considers it a death sentence, and so even though you qualify for up to 6 months for hospice, most people are only in hospice for 2 weeks or less. But going forward, as the boomers are able to accept a terminal illness and make their own choices about how aggressive they want treatments, they will make decisions and actually seek hospice. We now have the pulsed form, the physician-ordered life-sustaining treatment form, which, once again, was driven by the boomers. It's almost in every state, and it does not replace an advanced care directive, but it has three line items for end-of-life wishes that are critical to have. And you have to be proactive to have this form and have your physician sign it, and he has to keep it in your file. It's one page, hot pink, two sides. And they advise, if need be, depending on who you have there for you at the end of life, that you can literally just tape it to your bed to make sure that you have the wishes that you want observed. We've seen a huge shift in holistic medicine. That's something that the hospitals are now embracing and bringing programs in. And this has to do with the fact that when somebody has a terminal illness, you'll get anxieties and depression, and anything that you can do to help yourself through it is a good thing, be acupuncture or Reiki or aromatherapy. Aid in Dying has really come to the forefront. We have four states where it's legal now. It used to be called assisted suicide, and it's now called Aid in Dying. This last year, we had Brittany Maynard at the age of 29 that opted for Aid in Dying. She had a brain tumor. She made national news. 16 million people alone went into people.com just to read her story, unique visitors. So this was really huge. And here's an example of something that most people don't know about, the funeral rule. It actually, the Federal Trade Commission created it in the 80s, and it's to protect consumers when they buy funeral services. And it's a very lengthy, multi-paged law. And so going forward, there'll be more awareness about this. And to give you an example, if you make a phone call to a funeral home, they have to quote you prices over the phone. When you walk in, they have to hand you a price list that's itemized.
Now that we've presented to you what we see as the four trends that are currently driving the boomers to transform the image of death, we'd like to look at some current indicators to give you a glimpse of what we see developing in the near future. We'll create new celebrations. We've already have begun to see those who, once they've been diagnosed with a terminal illness, begin to plan and attend their own end-of-life ceremonies. As the boomers become more understanding and accepting about being diagnosed with a terminal illness, we'll see this trend increase. Wouldn't you want to be at your own going-away party? Don't you want to hear what everyone has to say about you while you're still alive? Yeah, well, you get the chance to say something about them as well. More of these types of personalized end-of-life celebrations and disposition rituals will occur. As culturally, we choose not to mourn one's death so much as celebrate one's life, even our own. Another thing moving forward is we're going to reconnect with nature. We'll alter our perspective of our relationship to the earth. We can be buried, burned, frozen via cryonics, or liquidated by alkaline hydrolysis. We will seriously consider all of these options and more. The one that I'm most fond of is this called the Urban Death Project, founded and directed by Katrina Spade. The Urban Death Project is a new system for gently and sustainably disposing of the dead using the process of composting. At the heart of the project is a three-story core within which bodies and high-carbon materials such as wood chips are placed. Over the span of a few months, with the help of aerobic decomposition and microbial activity, the bodies decompose fully, leaving a rich compost. The Urban Death Project is not simply a system for turning our bodies into soil-building material. It's also a space for the contemplation of our place in the natural world and a ritual to help us say goodbye to our loved ones by connecting us with the cycle of nature. And that project is still on Kickstarter, and feel free to contribute to it. She's rapidly approaching her goal. Another thing we'll be doing is we're going to extend our lives. One remarkable way is being conducted by Director of Resuscitation Research and author Dr. Sam Parnia. In his book, Erasing Death, he describes his research into how the mind is independent of the brain, and because of that, has developed a way that by using new resuscitation medicine techniques, he and other doctors are now sometimes capable of reviving people after their heart has stopped beating and their brain has flatlined. Although most people view death as irreversible, he claims that resuscitation research and experiments show that, in fact, it may just be the opposite. Another trend that we're going to see is we'll integrate technology. As technology becomes more naturalized into our lives, it will play an even greater role in mediating our relationships, even our relationships with those deceased. One project called Aerial Urn exists in a new space developing, that of techno-mysticism. The way Ariel Earn works is a hair sample from the deceased is sent to have a whole genome sequencing performed. The whole genome data is then interpolated to where the letters of the person's DNA sequence is made to correspond to a series of musical tones. So, for example, A becomes middle A note, and C becomes C note, G becomes G note, etc. The urn then connects wirelessly to the internet to receive a data transmission, and through the urn, now acting as a wireless speaker, the bereaved will hear a rapid, seemingly random and never-ending series of musical tones composed by the deceased loved one. It's quite remarkable. Who knows? We'll see what the music video looks like.
Will also change our language. So language changes culture, and culture changes language. And what we see in the future is we will not be saying he or she passed away, because actually, your dog dies, your cat dies, and we die too. And that will be our language. And the beginning indicator of this is Hallmark. Hallmark has always had condolence cards, but they actually just introduced a line of cards for people who have terminal illnesses, for people who are dying. We'll die consciously. So this is not a new concept, but it'll be very much embraced by the boomers. And it means to be conscious while dying, to be present, and to be loving, and to allow healing, and possibly spiritual awakening. It's basically to literally be conscious of the process. And Steve Jobs would be a really good example of that, where he had all of his loved ones surrounding him, and he actually looked above everybody's head. And his last words were, "Oh my," three times. And while we don't know the exact meaning of these words, what we do know is that Steve Jobs was fully conscious and was aware of that profound moment, and that he was drawing his last breath. We will hold sacred space. We will give ourselves permission to feel whatever feelings and emotions we have to create the space we want to have around us at the last days or weeks of our lives. And we will choose who we want to share that space with. So we already have a variety of options that are coming up to start to create, help hold that space. And some examples are death midwives, or what's also called death doulas. And just like birth midwives help bring you into the world, a death midwife will help you exit the world. We also have music therapy. And it's been proven that with music therapy, you need less pain medication and you have less anxiety. And so there's a number of options out there, and some of them are Threshold Choir, which is a national nonprofit organization of volunteers who sing at your bedside. Or harpists, who will play to the rhythm of your breathing and perhaps even those last breaths of your life. There's also a program for those who don't want to die alone called No One Dies Alone, started by an ICU nurse who had duties and was unable to be there for a man who was dying. We will ease suffering. The advent of palliative care has been a critical element to dying comfortably. And a lot of people look at palliative care as something just for the dying, and it's actually for anybody who has any kind of a critical illness. And it actually deals with people in a very holistic manner. It's more than just dealing with pain medications. A palliative care nurse or physician will look at you and see, is there more than one physician? What are all the medications they're giving them? Where are you at in your advanced care directives? And how are you mentally doing? Is there a divorce that's going on? Is there problems within the family and whatever needs to happen to sort of just ease your situation and make things better for you? And in terms of palliative care, I want to give you a really good example of what we're going to see in the future. It's really typical for most people to be on morphine at the end of life, and what happens is that they have to up the dosage to continue to ease the pain for you as you go along. And there's a point at where you have so much morphine in your system that you're literally laying in bed and you're pretty much zoned out and you can't function anymore. And so there's a hospice nurse who actually gives Ritalin to patients to counteract the morphine. And so she had a patient who was doing her taxes on the last day. I don't know if I would be doing my taxes. And another one who was writing a book. So that's just a glimpse of what we see coming down in the future. And last, we will choose where we die. And we know overwhelmingly right now that the boomers are going to choose to die at home. And this photograph here actually was posted on my Facebook a month ago. A friend of mine, Sandra Fish, actually shot this. She's a hospice worker, and this is Elizabeth. She's 103 years old, and this is literally 4 days before she died. And I would say that this, for me, would be a really wonderful, good death, to have had a long life, to be pain-free. She's sitting up, and this is literally moments before her son, who's in town to be with her, called her on the phone. And as I conclude, I just want to give you my last thought here. I've gone through this personal journey over the last 4 years of becoming educated about end of life, and I think what has been the most amazing aspect for me personally has been just the range of experts for end of life that are out there. And so many of them, we don't know who they are because we're not fully talking about death right now. And so these people are virtually invisible. And what's really amazing about them is more than the fact that they bring their expertise, that caring for people who are dying, dead, or grieving actually makes them happy. Just think about that. It makes them happy. And so what they bring is more than their expertise. They bring their heart to you at that moment when they care for you. And that in itself is why, as we move forward, death will become the most profound part of life. Thank you.
We'd like to remind our listening audience this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Suzette Sherman and Peter Strathus on Death, the Last Taboo. I know there are questions. So I'd like to open it up to our audience to questions, and we'll, if you have a question, raise your hand, and we'll pass the mic so that the listening audience can hear.
Okay. I'd just like to say the first stanza of a poem that I remember, only the first line. It starts, "Death, be not proud," and I wonder if anybody could finish it for me.
I'm not able to. Maybe somebody else here can. But thank you.
You've described a number of wonderful new kinds of choices that individuals, specifically the baby boomers, will have. Do you have any thoughts about helping them mediate between family disputes of people who their family might have different views of what they should do?
In terms of
the choices they're making, say, for in particular aid in dying, some family members might have very strong.
There's actually experts who do mediate that work with you to sit down, and that would be an example of an invisible expert that will help you go through that process of, and I'm blanking out on the term right now, the specialty, and I apologize.
One of the most important things.
And when Suzette's talking about, I mean, and that's a good point, because actually I went through that with my own family, and the part of what's up in Ponds is there to do is to take some of these specialists and people who have been really kind of working in this realm for a long time, and make them visible through resources and make them evident, so you can to make apparent all of the assistance that is really out there. It's a lot.
So yeah, so John O'Grady just raised his hand there, and he's an estate planner. That's something that he would deal with, and there's others as well that would specialize in actually working with family members to do that.
But actually, I want to say that the best gift my mother gave me was to talk with me and my siblings while she was alive, years before she had the aneurysm, about what she wanted. And this is particularly important to me because I learned this from the AIDS crisis here in the 80s,
yeah,
where young men and their families had to make super hard choices, and they were forced to talk about it, and the rest of us can teach us how to learn those lessons as well.
Yeah. It's very good, very, very true. That's the greatest gift you can give, is to let your children know what it is that you want.
You didn't talk about recycling your body. I've donated my body to UCSF when I go, and they will dispose of any remains after 2 years, but they can take whatever they want. And I thought a lot of the newer generation, the younger generation, is more into recycling and environmental stuff. So yeah. I was wondering if
I actually just saw a lecture, UCSF, and actually regarding the whole body program, and it's very interesting. It's something that you really need to plan ahead. It doesn't mean they won't take a body at the last minute, but they actually do have a lot. But you have to sign up and get all your paperwork in order and make sure it's in your advanced care directives and that your family members know that you want to donate your body. And somebody needs to make that phone call so that they know to come pick it up. But it's a great, great, yes. And there's lots of research done with that. It's tremendous, yeah.
First of all, thank you very much for the presentation. It was really well done.
Thank you.
And I'm appreciative that we can find a place to go for more information. My question is regarding the green burial. And we saw the person in a very nice woodland setting. But that's not quite legal to bury somebody unless it's in a cemetery. Or what is the law on that?
Well, there's a number of you can do it on your private property. You just have to get a permit to do it. And it depends on where you live if you can actually do that, but it is possible today. But there's a lot of green burial locations throughout the country. It's surprising how many there are now, and they really vary in terms of in their purest form. They look like wilderness, and there's no markers at all, to being allowed to put a stone with just a couple of letters in it, but a natural shape, or maybe being allowed to plant a bush or a tree or whatever on it. So it just varies based on what their rules are, but you'd be surprised at how many there are now.
Yeah, there's more, I think the reality is that you have more power. People have more power over controlling end-of-life issues than we've been led to believe. And that's one of the things that we've really been finding a lot about over the last few years, and part of what we're trying to kind of make public, yeah.
Two questions. One, with regards to hospice care, I've seen the last couple of years been aware that the commercial healthcare people are very much getting into it. There's a lot of money to be made in hospice care. Mm-hmm. And I have some questions as to the quality of hospice care one gets in the commercial realm. The second has to do with much of your presentation would be most appropriate here in San Francisco and also in the other blue areas, politically blue areas of the country. But in the middle America, we're talking the Corn Belt and all the rest of it, what you're saying just would not be applicable at all to the popular culture therein.
So actually, regarding the hospice question, Consumer Reports just did their first review, and as it stands right now, there isn't really a rating system for you to be able to go and look into each hospice and see how they rank, but they're working on that, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 2 years down the road, and I've had people up in age say to me, I don't have that much time, but in 2 years there will be indeed an opportunity to be able to take a look at hospice, and not every hospice will take you, so it's something that you need to look ahead to really pick one out and make sure that you can get slotted if you are particular about where you want to go. And then, yes, my father loves to remind me that San Francisco is not the rest of the world. And I'm from the Midwest, but they're very progressive. So, but as we said in the beginning of the presentation, we are in the epicenter right now of these changes. And so we know going forward there's going to be big changes. In fact, having followed this for the last 30 years, there was a point at where even in the Bible Belt states, cremation was taking over. And that was a huge, huge thing for the funeral homes. So we're past the tipping point virtually at this point. And it is, I mean, even in Michigan, it's got a high cremation rate. And that right there says more change than you realize is happening. And that's a good question.
Yeah, if you look at the, you can go online and see the cremation ratio to deaths state by state. And you'll be shocked. Per capita, like who's near the top? You'd think like, oh, big state, they're near the top. And it's like, no, it's like a lot of these states are the kind of adoption rate is quite dramatic. They go to the top in terms of the per capita just because they have a smaller population. But, you know, we're approaching, I mean, this is quite remarkable. We're approaching a 50% cremation rate next year. Who would have thought? I mean, shocking. It's quite remarkable.
Quick question on speaking of green, is cremation considered more green than a green cemetery?
Typically, we look at green burial as being more green. You know, I can't really validate that in terms of any studies, and I don't know. Jerry Grace Lyons is here, and she's actually virtually. I don't know if you have any comments on that. I didn't.
Well, the amount of fossil fuel used for in one cremation, I think it's you could drive a car 4,800 miles mm-hmm. per cremation. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea. There's somebody who did a study on how many times you can go to the moon and back with all mm-hmm. the cremations we mm-hmm. do each year. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
Right, right.
So, and I also want to say, commenting on this gentleman. Mm-hmm. We're always ahead of the curve in mm-hmm. trends and changes sure. here, but that doesn't mean that it isn't quickly moving across the country. We have several national organizations and the Green Burial Council was started mm-hmm. and is in based in New Mexico, mm-hmm. has a lot of information about green burial and all the new sites that are being created. Funerals.org or FCA, Funeral Consumer Alliance, is a national organization that has just, it's huge in the amount of information you can find out about funerals and green funerals. And then there's the National Home Funeral Alliance that is all about family-directed home funerals. And there's organizations in Midwest, Minnesota, mm-hmm. and all over that are in Texas, every place now, if you look up National Home Funeral Alliance. So there's people everywhere that are starting support groups, educational groups, helping people learn about these new approaches and finding even guides or doulas to help people through their dying as well as post-death care at home.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that...
I'd just like to say I'm... Suzette didn't mention, but I started Final Passages 20 years ago, and we're in Sebastopol, and we're all about family-directed home funerals and green burial education. So finalpassages.org.
Yeah. Home nice. Funeral consultants, yeah.
All right.
Well, yes, and that's one of the things when I worked at EDF, though having said that, because I worked in solid waste reduction, one of the things is we don't have a lack of land in this country. But there's also the consideration in terms of the fact that our bodies are not pure anymore. But I would agree with Jerry Grace in terms of, you know, the fossil fuel and all that. So there's it outweighs that.
As Suzette said, we don't have a problem with land here. But as we showed in the presentation, there are people who are thinking about ways that the bodies become useful beyond their extinction. Like, for example, you know, the composting project I showed, it's very easy to kind of write something that like that off, like, wow, that's wacky. But it's not wacky at all. It's actually quite brilliant and really quite spiritual. And then there's other, you know, and it's very common in other countries, and they've been doing it for centuries, where bodies are disinterred after 5 years because of, you know, limited land resources. And the bones are then actually put into, I forget what the name of a building it is. Exactly. And they're spectacular. It's like buildings full of bones. They're remarkable to go see, you know. So, you know, but the thing about natural burial, I think that, you know, we can't really just look at everything through a life cycle analysis. You know, as a product designer, that's what we have to do a lot. Because if you start looking through everything as through a life cycle analysis, you know, in terms of what does it cost to produce some good, you know, they just released a statistic where it takes 6.5 gallons of water to make one glass of orange juice. So, you know, so I think what we have to look at is it as what's best for us in terms of, and those around us, in terms of how we want to kind of punctuate, you know, hopefully a long and happy life here. And there's a lot of ways to do it. You know.
Yes.
This may be a different talk entirely, but I'm curious what you think of new technologies for life extension, AI, nanotech, advanced medicine, et cetera, coming down the pike, say, 10, 20 years from now. Do you follow that area?
Well, actually, Tad, would you be okay with answering that question? How would you feel about that? Since Tad actually specializes in that, Tad Hoag here. Yeah.
Is that you?
Yeah. He can answer that question very, very well.
So it's a very controversial area. But I think that it's one of the areas where, say, Silicon Valley technology that's being developed will give rise to a much wider range of possibilities and choices that people will have, you know, in the coming decades. How this is going to play out and how society will accept and adjust to it, open question. But I think it's great to discuss it.
Yeah, and life extension technologies, they're not just going to be about, you know, things that can actually happen to a, you know, a select individual. There's some great startups that I'm peripherally involved with where, you know, they're developing, you know, biological chips where they can run tests that, you know, before, you know, they wouldn't be able to kind of run very easily because you need live subjects or this or that. So they're making synthetic tissues that'll lead to kind of faster turnarounds in medical advances and all that. So the technology question you're asking is really broad, but there's no question that life sciences is, you know, it's huge.
And I just want to point out that several of us end-of-life professionals are in the room. I'm very excited to see that.
Yeah, me too.
And that, you know, we post on Seven Ponds, and Seven Ponds is a great resource for kind of keeping, you know, in touch with this rapidly developing field.
Yeah.
And it can really kind of point you to, you know, more detailed resources, because we're just kind of skimming the surface on a lot of these topics. And I could add a number of things, but I know time is short and I like to talk, so I won't.
Thanks, John.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Please join me in thanking our speakers today, Peter Stathis. Suzette. I'm waiting for the Vintners Association to accept bodies because I want to donate mine to be wine corks. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 112th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned.